conclusion of the groundwater protection portion of this workshop, and I'm happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Okay, Jane, you are unmuted. You can talk.
Hi, thank you, Chris, and thank you, everybody. This is a really useful explanation. There's a lot of material in the actual documents, so it's good to have a summary. And I'm interested. I mean, I understand how measuring volume of water, of irrigation water that's applied, assists in making the necessary calculations for accurate, you know, A and R reporting. And I also understand the role of the ET variable in that. However, you know, looking at the cost analysis for how much that'll actually cost growers, it just feels like that, especially on reporting on a per crop basis, is going to be a real burden, especially for small scale, highly diversified growers. And, you know, I wonder what consideration you guys can offer to those types of growers in measuring and reporting those metrics. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your question, Jane. So we do certainly realize that there are costs associated with complying with these requirements. And with respect in particular to the irrigation water information requirements that we have in here, I think that during the first year that the order is in effect, we're going to be along with the growers working out specifics on guidance for achieving compliance with these various components of the order. And I suppose I don't have a very specific response to your question right now, but I will tell you that we are going to be working on providing resources that we can provide to growers to attain these various numerical values, and those resources are going to be put on our website, and we'll be providing, you know, frequently asked question responses and those sorts of things. So we acknowledge that there's some ground that still needs to be covered in terms of helping growers get to these things.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure, let's see, are you still able to talk, Jane? Oh, let's see. Jane, I just unmuted
yes.
you.
Yeah.
Are you there? Okay, great. Okay. Yeah. So as part of the total nitrogen applied reporting requirement, which has been part of Ag Order 3.0 and 2.0, growers have also been responsible for tracking their water. You know, so it's not a completely new requirement. Let's put it that way. So they should have been dialing this in for the past few years.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. The ET variable is that seems like kind of a heavy lift.
I'm sorry, you said the ET variable.
Yeah.
You know, so my understanding is that, of course, there's SEMA stations, you know, and then if you know, that's where you can acquire the ET data, and then hopefully as we move forward, growers can get a better handle, who are not already doing this, but growers can get a better handle on their water usage and try to be as efficient as possible. that is of course going to require that ET data, you know, for them to do that. I've been to several workshops, and one of the things that the growers have said to me is that basically the fertilizer nitrogen follows the water. And so wherever the water goes, that's where the nitrogen goes. And so if they can get their arms around the use of water, which is going to take that crop ET, then we think that that is a necessary component of them complying.
Just another thing, Jane, you know, with respect to coming up with these ET values, you know, we don't expect growers to be putting up ET stations on their own properties, you know, every single grower doing that. Some may, and that would be great. But we also acknowledge that, you know, being able to obtain the information from the closest CMIS station is going to be reasonable for a lot of growers to get. So we're kind of hoping for some adjustment period, but also, you know, essentially trying to do the best you can to get a value that's applicable for the particular ranch and the particular crop.
Okay, so I'm going to call on three other people here. So Noelle, I see your hand, Eric and Perry. I'll take everybody in that order. So Noelle, I'm going to unmute you now.
Thank you. This is Noelle Kramers with Wine Institute. I appreciate the presentation this morning and look forward to hearing the rest of them. And I may be jumping the gun on my question, but I'm interested to get your thoughts on the monitoring and reporting and how that improves water quality when it's not tied specifically to ranches with the specific risk factors.
Are you referring to the tiering?
Not exact. I mean, the issue is that there is the monitoring and reporting is required ultimately across the board, regardless of the risk factor created, like the what's being used, how much is being applied. So I guess I'm trying to understand the potential water quality improvements that come from that monitoring and reporting if they're not tied specifically to the risk factors and what's being applied and used.
Okay. I am noticing an echo every time I speak. Is it possible that you might have a phone and a computer operating at the same time?
Yeah, so Diane, Noelle, I just muted you. I think you had perhaps two speakers going, so I just muted her. So now, go ahead, Diane.
Okay, so hopefully this will address your question. So with the groundwater phase areas, the phase areas themselves and the territory that's covered by those phase areas is not just based on a groundwater basin, but it's based on impairment to groundwater quality that already exists in those basins, as well as areas where, for instance, the groundwater phase one areas are places where there is likelihood of recharge occurring. So those areas where recharge is occurring is considered to be our the highest priority. I mean, the groundwater phasing is a priority a methodology. And so in terms of risk areas, we consider everything that's in, every ranch that's in a groundwater phase one area to be some of the highest risk areas, more so than the groundwater phase two areas. Those areas are based on the degree of nitrate MCL exceedances that have already been reported. So in terms of risk, we have tried to address that based on groundwater impairment as it exists right now or could potentially exist in the future. I guess in terms of how much is being loaded, how much is being used in various places, you know, that's part of the determination that will come later after all ranches are reporting applied versus removed and what is left over. I hope that answered your question.
Okay, Eric, you should be unmuted here.
Hi, Chris. Thank you. This is Eric Gilman. I don't have a comment. I just had noticed that another participant whose tag is D-O-R-E-L, R-E-L-L-E, had been raising her hand in front of the camera, but not on the program. So just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you very much. And could you repeat the initials for me, Eric?
It's D-O-R-E-L-L-E.
Thank you. And whoever that is, if you take a look at the bottom right-hand part of your screen, you should see a message there or an opportunity for you to raise your hand. If you would click on that.
She's shaking her head no.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
Perry, you should be ready to talk. Unmuted.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So for the domestic well sampling for 123T, if a well is found to exceed that level, is it anticipated that a grower would need to continue sampling, analyzing for that constituent, as that is a fairly expensive analysis and may lead to costs that may not be justified? I'm sure the well owner would likely act upon that being in the water and make some adjustment to the supply of water. But if growers are required to continually monitor that to show that it's an exceedance, that would seem to be a cost that's a little bit excessive.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning the 123 TCP, Perry. So just as a little background on this particular constituent, if the Division of Drinking Water with the State Board that regulates water systems since 2017 has been requiring the water systems to sample for this constituent, and the reason that it's kind of in the news is because this has a very low, very small maximum contaminant level. It's 5 parts per trillion. And the reason it is so low is because, like many other constituents that are in this same kind of family and chemical makeup, it's actually a carcinogen. So there's amount of, you know, certainly a high amount of concern with it and being able to, ingest it. So with respect to the requirement that we have for the domestic wells here in the order, what we're hoping to be able to do is to get a better sense of the, you know, essentially a characterization throughout the region of where we're seeing the 123 TCP and where we are not seeing it. And we envision that at some point down the road, probably not too many years down the road, that we would be cutting back on who needs to sample for that. If someone does detect it in their well and it is above an MCL, we would be interested in seeing what is done to correct the exposure, the human health risk to that particular constituent. And so with respect to annual monitoring of it, there would be some amount of time where we would want to be seeing, has that concentration changed at all? Has a management practice been implemented that addresses it? And that management practice could mean, nothing more than having people notified that they shouldn't be drinking it and there's some sort of other alternate source of water for them to be drinking. So at this point, it's something that we will be willing to make adjustments to in terms of monitoring if it's not seen. That's pretty much how our thinking is right now. And with respect to cost associated with 123 TCP, I've made some checks with some labs and the cost for analysis is anywhere from $50 to $100, although there may be some variation in labs that I haven't spoken to.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Dorel. That's my first name. And thank you, Eric. My question has to do with the irrigation on a per crop basis. And let me tell you what we do so that you understand where I'm coming from. We grow herbs and we'll plant like 5 rows of cilantro and 7 rows of dill. And then a week or two later, we'll do that again on the next rows. And then a week or two later, we'll do that again on the next rows so that we have a continuous supply. So when we water it, we water those 12 rows at once. And I don't understand about how we get separate what goes to which crop.
Let's see. I think the Monica Baricarte, would you be available to give any insight to a response to this question?
Yes, can you hear me, Dorel?
Yes.
Monica, before you begin, I just want to introduce Monica here. Monica is one of our staff people who is very knowledgeable about this order, the preparation for it over many years' time, as well as previous orders. And I believe many of you may have spoken with Monica over time. So I think she's best equipped to address this question.
Hi, Dorel.
Hi.
We are hoping to develop a form that will be the submittal form for this information in GeoTracker that will allow you or every grower to basically, from the volume applied to the ranch, to be equally divided and distributed to each one of the crops that you are reporting on the form. Automatically will be an automatic calculation being done in GeoTracker, so you don't need to go on the field and measure how much water goes to each one of your crops. However, if you or other grower has the ability to do that and would like to, instead of giving each crop the equal amount, if you would like to separate the amounts a little more to this crop than others, will be all available to you on the automatic form.
Okay.
But as far as the on-the-ground measurement, you don't need to measure it on each crop. Again, it's just an estimation that will be done on the form.
Thank you, Monica.
I hope that helps.
Yes, that does.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Monica. So we actually have two more people who have their hands raised. We have run out of time, but if we could just hold the questions to just really short questions, and then if we don't get to your a more detailed answer that you would like, then we'll have another opportunity later on. So I'll call on Mr. Harry Ferdinand right now.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, hi, Harry Ferdinand. So I work for Swim System. We actually do water monitoring for a number of growers in the region. And so my question was, because a lot of our clients are interested in getting ahead of what the requirements are going to be, is there any specific hardware that's been kind of identified as how you want to look at water applied volumes? I guess the last response gave me a little bit of a response for that, but I just wanted to see if that had been talked about.
Go ahead, Diane.
So by hardware, do you mean something like water meters?
Yeah.
I think, you know, if water meters are available to people, that would certainly be the most accurate way of determining volume applied. There are other ways you can kind of do some back calculations associated with, the different components and the efficiency of what you know your irrigation system can provide. Also somehow looking at your electricity records, that sort of thing. But I'd say the most straightforward way of knowing that volume would be through water metering. And that is required in some parts of our Central Coast region, but not in others, although some people have voluntarily gone that route.
Okay, so it sounds like a water meter at the well and then the tool that Monica just described for determining the crop deliveries. Okay.
Right. We're hoping to be able to provide you with forms that that do the majority, if not all, of these calculations for you. Whereas you would just put in your information, and then we would have an automatic equation considered in the report itself. So it will kind of spit out the numbers that we're asking for.
Okay. We need to move on. Sorry. And then maybe one more quick question by Chris. Neil?
Hi, this is Chris with the Vineyard team. And I'm, for the low nitrogen crops who are essentially meeting the 2050 targets as of right now, and some of which are being kind of certified and having that information be verified. I'm curious why you didn't have a carve out or special consideration for those types of situations.
Actually, there's mention in, I believe, certainly in Attachment A, as well as I believe in the order itself, that indicates that if you are already meeting that 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre limit, that if you provide us with that information and can justify that is occurring, then there are definitely a lot of things that you don't have to report. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. And while we're going through these other presentations, I'll flip through the order to make sure that I can refer you to the appropriate part.
Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna move on then.